Welcome, good afternoon, and welcome to From Where We Are, stories of news and culture through the lens of USC and Southern California. I'm Jamila Hammond, coming to you live from Studio B and USC's Annenberg Media Center.
And I'm Audrea Simonu. It's Tuesday, September 14th. On today's show, students share about the firing of Clay Helton, a new mental health crisis hotline, and the concerns students have with Trojan Check. All that and more from where we are. The USC community was shocked to learn that head football coach Clay Helton was fired Monday afternoon. This move comes after Saturday's devastating 42-28 loss against Stanford. We took to the busy streets of campus to ask students their thoughts on this sudden shift for USC football.
We have a really good football team. That's why we were ranked 14, but Clay Helton was not doing the coaching job that was needed to really bring us to a potential, you know, college football playoff contender.
I don't think he was going to bring the team anywhere, but it's kind of shocking too because, you know, he was at the Pac-12 championship last year, but man. And so sudden after one game. I mean, two games now. It's crazy.
I think it's pretty interesting that it was at the beginning of the semester, but I know there has been past problems with the head coach, but I'm sure that they have a new head coach in mind, or else they wouldn't have made the move so quickly.
I'm not that big of a football fan.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I don't really know that much, but I do know that everybody's happy about it because he puts in the wrong players at the wrong time. Oh, I feel bad for him that everybody hates him so much, but yes, he sucks. I don't know.
We're still in control of our own destiny. You know, I'm the type of person, I don't count us out. Even with the playoff chaos happens, I think if we win out, I would even say we have a shot at even that. You know, there's no guarantee, but no, I'm very positive. I'm very disappointed. That was an embarrassing loss, but it's all right.
Fight on.
And that was James McCall, Emmanuel Thomas, Nathaniel Kim, Kia, and Allen.
It's voting day in California, and you just have a few hours left to cast ballots in today's recall election. California voters are deciding whether Governor Gavin Newsom will keep his job or get removed from office. A colorful mix of 46 people are competing to replace him. Annenberg News reporter Jane Lee and Amina Yes have more. This story was edited by Audrey Asumanu.
As California's recall is wrapping up, voter turnout seems to be faring well for Governor Newsom. Recent survey says he's leading the polls by 16 points against his most prominent opponent, Republican Larry Elder. Newsom will have to secure at least 50% of the vote to avoid being recalled. While today is the official election day, voting has been going on for some time by mail and in-person voting. As of last night, nearly 40% of mailed ballots were from registered Democrats, outnumbering votes sent in by Republicans by more than 2-1. More than 9 of California's 22 million registered voters have submitted mail-in ballots. Today, in-person voting started early this morning, and according to LA County Register Recorder, 11,000 votes were casted by 8:30 a.m. Last night, President Biden joined forces with Governor Newsom in Long Beach to encourage Californians to go out and vote.
I'm going to make this as simple as I can. You either keep Gavin Newsom as your governor, or you'll get Donald Trump.
Recall data collected by 538 shows the highest mail-in voter turnout came from white voters with 47% of the ballots. Unsurprisingly, age groups 65 and up have seen the highest turnout with 63% of the ballots cast. Newsom initially faced scrutiny over his COVID-19 measures and policies regarding undocumented immigrants. The governor seemed to be facing a tighter race early on when general polls showed many California Democrats did not plan on voting, seeing the election as an easy win for Newsom. But with Elder entering the race, the governor characterized him as a Trumpian figure, stoking energy among his voters, especially women, upset with Elder's stance on abortion. Californians continue to cast their votes throughout the day. Voting doors will close at 8 o'clock p.m. tonight. After tonight, officials will continue to count all stamped mail-in ballots, which could take several more days or even a couple of weeks.
We all know to call 911 in case of emergencies, but coming up next year, you'll have a new number to call in the event of a mental health emergency. It's 988. This month, the State Department of Healthcare Services announced that it will provide $20 million to support the creation of new call centers. Some advocates say more than twice that would be needed to be more fully funded the 988 Mental Health Emergency Call System. The idea for the new, easy-to-remember number comes with the growing awareness that police may not be the best responders to assist in mental health emergencies. The state measure to create the hotline is AB-988 and named the Miles Hall Lifeline Act in honor of a 23-year-old Black man killed by police officers in 2019 while he was experiencing a mental health crisis. The bill notes there has been an over-reliance on law enforcement for the public health crisis. Since 2015, a quarter of all fatal police shootings involved a mental illness. California law requires individuals to use 911 for all emergencies, but in 2020, federal lawmakers enacted the National Suicide Hotline Designation Act, which set 988 as the National Suicide Prevention and Mental Health Crisis Hotline. States will need to implement this system by July 16, 2022. In late February, the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors passed two motions to improve mental health crisis responses in LA County. One motion is AB-988, the three-digit telephone number for suicide prevention and mental health crisis hotline. But out of the 24,000 calls made to the crisis assistance helping out on the street program in 2019, less than 1% of the teams called for police backup. Supervisor Janice Kahn co-authored the motion to co-sponsor AB-988 with Supervisor Catherine Barger. Kahn believes AB-988 will be a game changer because it is another easy-to-remember number that can be used in case of an emergency, this time mental health and suicide prevention.
I'm Jamila Hammond. We're glad you're with us. Four from where we are.
And I'm Audrey Simonu. It's 49 minutes past the hour. Coming up, the bloody history of red carpets. More to come in a bit.
Students are finding ways to bypass USC's Trojan check system. Now students can avoid answering the symptom questions or even avoid COVID testing and still enter campus. Anthony Robledo has more on the story.
To help slow the spread of the coronavirus, USC requires that students complete a health screening to enter campus. Vaccinated students, unvaccinated grad students, and employees must be tested once a week. Unvaccinated grad students must be tested twice a week. USC employees scan a barcode students receive by completing an online health screening and by being tested regularly for COVID-19. If students say they show no symptoms and regularly test negative, they can access campus. However, some are evading the process by answering questions as a guest, as they don't have to be tested. Melanie To, a sophomore majoring in computer science, says that Trojan Check is effective to a certain extent, as USC can enforce honesty.
But symptoms-wise, I think a lot of people lie because there's so many people coughing in my classes that it makes me feel uneasy.
She says it's insensitive for people to avoid COVID testing, as many people on campus are immunocompromised or have older family members with underlying health issues. Chloe Higgins, a junior majoring in American pop culture, says that Trojan Check incentivizes students to lie. She says that it's not reasonable to miss class if someone shows symptoms because that doesn't mean they have COVID. As someone with asthma, she says she regularly has difficulty breathing, but no longer notes that on the Trojan Check's questionnaire. She recalled an experience where she missed class because she answered that question truthfully.
I think I 100% know so many people lie on the Trojan Check just so they can come on campus. Because you pay, $80,000 a year here, you're going to go on campus.
Zach Rocklin Walsh, a junior acting student, says that Trojan Check is just a way for the school to not be responsible for the spread of the virus.
I don't know how much it's actually doing, and I don't know how much it's actually preventing COVID from spreading, but sure, it's nice to feel like there's something.
At a press conference last week, Dr. Van Orman, chief health officer of USC Student Health, said that there's always been ways to subvert systems designed to keep people safe. She said if a student wants to come to campus with symptoms, they will find a way to do that.
If you're a Trojan and you are a part of our community, you understand why we're doing this. And that it's really not about finding ways to subvert the system. It's finding ways to understand why those systems are in place.
Health metrics show it's been a third week of declining COVID cases throughout LA County. Whether or not campus will reflect those metrics is yet to be known. But Van Orman says they will continue to look at data on a weekly basis. For Annenberg Media, I'm Anthony Robledo.
save those funnels. As COVID population testing ramps up, testing locations are no longer giving out full saliva testing kits. Students feel it's an inconvenience, but are mostly understanding of the change. Jason Chua has more.
Save those funnels indeed. USC students dropping off their saliva tests this week found out they were getting a bit less than what they were used to. POP testing locations are no longer giving out saliva collection kits to students who drop off their samples. Instead, they're only being provided with a new test tube, sans funnel, straw, and bag. We ran into a few students at the recently added USC bookstore drop-off location.
I live in the Village, so I think this is the closest one to me.
That is Jade Zhu, a freshman business admin and art history major from Philadelphia. She just dropped off her sample.
I don't think they're giving out more funnels anymore, so I'm going to just keep using this one from now.
In the beginning of the semester, saliva testing was the only choice for POP testing. Now, swab testing is not only available, but encouraged. Swab testing participants are entered into daily drawings for bookstore gift cards. Some students, like Natalia Osuna, like the swab test, citing its convenience and speed.
Yeah, I would say I prefer the swab test because it's just much quicker to do. You can do it just in like a minute or two. Yeah, it's a lot easier as well to like do that than to, you know, spend like, I don't know how long spitting in a little tube.
While the change is inconvenient, some students like Hua Min Lee acknowledge the potential benefits of not providing full kits.
I don't think it's a good decision for the student to reuse it, but I would say it's good for the environment.
So remember, for your next POP test, consider a swab test, or remember not to toss and save that funnel. For Annenberg Media, I'm Jason Chua. Brian Sarabia contributed to this report.
In today's Trojan Tales, a unique degree program at the Thornton School of Music has already made significant waves throughout the music industry. Here's Kai Grady with the story.
What if I told you one of the most unique and cutting-edge music programs in the country was started on a napkin?
And we hit it off, and he said, "Can I take you to lunch?" And I said, "Sure."
That's Patrice Rushen, chair of the popular music program at USC, talking about the program's founding director, Chris Sampson.
And he whipped out of his pocket on a piece of paper about the size of a napkin, and he showed me the scaffolding for what could be this popular music program. Well, you know, I was knocked out.
And I literally just took the napkin, I drew out sort of the large pieces of the curriculum to show her. And yeah, that was a pivotal moment.
Sampson remembers how excited Rushen got by his napkin scribblings.
Basically, we came away from that lunch and she told me she wants in. She wants to be a part of it. But when you get that kind of commitment from somebody like Patrice, of course, you know, you'll want to make the most of it.
Sampson is an expert songwriter, performer, and educator. He was able to marry his skills to create a groundbreaking program, the first of its kind. And Rushen is one of the most decorated musicians in the industry, but she's also an accomplished composer for both film and television scoring.
A lot of times people make the leap that the students are at the lower end of the food chain. Ours is flipped, where the students are at the top of the food chain. Our dealings with them are such that we want to provoke careful thought.
We've got situations that if you were actually to look at it with an untrained eye, you'd go, that is craziness. It's like chaos going on. But what's happening is very important learning.
It didn't happen overnight. It took a lot of time and effort to get the program where it is today.
And, you know, the first class, you know, met with some skepticism. In terms of the rest of the school, because it was different.
The POP music program started in 2009, and Sam Wilkes was a member of that first class. This is some of Wilkes' music. He credits the program and its faculty for his musical versatility.
I got to kind of ask people I was fans of, like Patrice and Dugu, Alfonso. I got to ask them and seek their guidance on how to be the best musician I could be.
Following the success of the POP music program, it may only be a matter of time before something similar is offered at music schools across the country.
The evolution of our methods and the continuation of evaluating the effectiveness of that I think if that's that is a big part of the secret sauce, I guess, that allows for us to continue to be excited about the program and to continue to offer an environment which has yielded and continues to yield results.
Wilkes and many other pop music grads are living proof of those excellent results. For Annenberg Media, this is Kai Grady.
If you've ever wondered about the origins of curious words and phrases, here's Atticus Parker with today's Root Source.
After a year-long pandemic-induced delay, the 2021 Met Gala returned in full force Monday night. The theme was America, a lexicon in fashion. At fashion's biggest night out, A-list stars paid homage to old Hollywood glamour and influential American designers on the red carpet. Well, actually a cream carpet. Red carpets have been a pre-ceremony exhibition for years. They are synonymous with distinction, celebrity, tradition, glitz, and glamour. But why do they exist? When did they start? And why are we calling carpets that are very obviously not red, red carpets? The first written mention of a red carpet dates back to 458 BC in Greek playwright Aeschylus' Agamemnon. King Agamemnon left his wife Clytemnestra to fight in the Trojan Wars, but when he came back, he brought back a new special friend named Cassandra. Clytemnestra was not happy. She rolled out an eye-catching crimson carpet to convince him and his lover to walk into their death. The couple stepped onto that carpet, and Clytemnestra murdered them both. As the second millennium commenced, the Roman Catholic Church embraced red as the color of grandeur and authority throughout the Byzantine Empire. It not only became connected to the power of kings, but also to the blood of Christ. The Pope ordered at the end of the 1200s that only cardinals, the highest ranking men of the Catholic Church, could wear red. However, the red carpet as we know it today first came to be in 1902. The New York City Railroad installed red carpets to greet travelers on the upper-class train from New York to Chicago. This is assumed to be the origin of the red carpet treatment. 20 years later, a long crimson carpet was rolled out in front of the Egyptian Theater in Hollywood for the premiere of Robin Hood. Douglas Fairbanks, in black, stood out magnificently against the red at his feet. Soon enough, the red carpet became nearly ubiquitous for movie premieres. But it wasn't until 1961 that the Academy Awards picked up the ceremonious habit. And in 1964, the Academy decided to film the stars arriving at the venue. That's when the idea really took off. It turns out everyone looks good with red at the soles of their privileged feet. Plus, the Hollywood elite, whose feet have trod the scarlet rug, seem to have shaken Agamemnon's unfortunate fate. At this year's Met Gala, the carpet was not red. But thousands of news sources, from the New York Times to Variety to Vogue, published articles about all the red carpet looks. Why? Though the phrase's meaning has evolved around the years, red still represents glamour. It's special. When they roll out the cream carpet for you, well, try not to spill anything and know that an era has passed. From Annenberg Media, I'm Atticus Parker.
And that's all we have for on today's From Where We Are. Polina Cherezova, Fernando Cienfuegos, and Jeffrey Lee produced today's show. We also got help from Shirley Jihad and Gabrielle Horton.
Fernando Cienfuegos is our technical operator, and Derek Renfro composed our theme music.
Subscribe to From Where We Are on Apple Podcasts, and if you're looking for more news, be sure to download Annie Annenberg's news app and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Annenberg Media. I'm Jamila Hammond.
And I'm Audrea Simonu. From all of us at Annenberg Radio, wherever you are, we hope you'll join us again for
From Where We Are.